Welcome to Tea Time. This is a weekly pop culture podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Hallowell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer. And today we're checking in with some April streaming recommendations. It's been a while.
Yes.
Josie and the Pussycats, 20 years later. And post-COVID travel plans.
It's coming. They're coming, you guys.
Yeah.
Guys, follow us on Twitter. We're at teatime_33. And on Instagram, we're at teatimepod. Okay, before we get into the show, let's take a quick break. All right, first category. Tea Time is checking in with our April streaming recommendations. We are so close, but not out of the woods yet. Keep mostly staying at home if you can. So we're providing you things to watch and to listen to fill our time. I personally have been on a very weird journey revisiting old like Judd Apatow movies. And I think this is mostly just because I live with a boy and it was mostly his decision. But I have currently been rewatching Knocked Up, which is a fantastic movie, in my opinion. Pineapple Express, which is not really my humor, but I did enjoy it. I think the one I'm least looking forward to is Superbad. And the one I'm most looking forward to revisiting is Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Do you guys have thoughts on Judd Apatow movies?
Forgetting Sarah Marshall is so good.
So good. I do really like that movie.
I have a question for you. So your anti-Paul Rudd stance historically was formed in part because you didn't like sort of the Judd Apatow model of like the man-child who can't take care of himself. So has your stance on Judd Apatow and his characters changed along with your stance on Paul Rudd?
So my stance on Paul Rudd has changed because I realized he is not to blame. He is just an actor who is following directions. My problem still remains with Judd Apatow, which yes, I have not grown out of that. Revisiting this, I'm like, yeah, this is all still pretty shitty. Which is what my favorite, Knocked Up has a lot of heart in it. And I only like the more emotional, heartwarming parts of it. Amelia, what are your thoughts on some of these movies? Do you like them? Hate them?
I do like them. I think they're really funny. I agree. I think Sarah Marshall is really funny. I love Superbad.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Do you think they'll like it? I only saw it once so long ago.
I mean, some of the jokes are pretty juvenile, but I don't know. I think Jonah Hill is like so funny. I don't know why, but
I agree.
So funny. So he's just got really good comedic timing, and I think people say that a lot about Michael Cera too. Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's just like I feel when you watch a Judd Apatow movie, you kind of know what you're gonna get, and not that that's a bad thing necessarily. Yeah. It's a good thing. Like they're funny movies, so I'm excited for you.
I don't know if this is off or on brand, but I think my favorite movie of all time is This Is the End, which is like extremely immature.
Time?
Top two or three.
Wow.
It's really good. So anyway, yeah, I contain multitudes, as Kate likes to say.
You sure do.
Anyway, that's my like streaming journey this month. What are you guys doing? Kate, what do you got?
So we have some very like self-indulgent recommendations. This is just a Tea Time streaming update per se. I don't talk about K-pop that often on this podcast, certainly not as often as I want to. But I wanted to break my rule this week and tell you guys what I'm watching, which is there's a series of like competition shows that Mnet, which is like a Korean broadcast station, has been doing for the past couple years. And they're called, the first one was called Queendom. And right now I'm watching Kingdom. So what they are is they take these K-pop groups, like real active K-pop groups, and they compete against each other and do like performances and stages and covers. And like there are no eliminations, like no whatever. They just like, you know, they perform each other's songs. They perform like new songs, etc. And I was like, how do I illustrate how fun this is to watch to non-K-pop fans? So to explain, Queendom was all girl groups. And it was all like active girl groups, like some really famous, some less famous. So just to illustrate, this is what like a US version or like a Western version of the show would look like. So this is what you would have in like the hypothetical international Western Queendom show. So all of these groups would be competing against each other every week. Fifth Harmony, Spice Girls, Little Mix, the Pussycat Dolls, and then there's always like an older group that like has kind of fallen out of like relevance, or like a member of a former group. Like on Queendom, there was like a member of a group that had gone solo. So for those purposes, I'm pulling in Kelly Rowland. So it's the K-pop equivalent of that, basically. So what's so fun about it is like you would have like, you know, what's the Pussycat Girls? Nicole Scherzinger? You would have like her doing a duet with Kelly Rowland. And then you would have like Normani and Camila Cabello the next week. And it's just really fun to like see them become friends and like there's some drama or whatever. But it's just fun. It's like these people that you know who each other are, but like don't really interact. And like you get to like, you know, the vocalists compete and the dancers compete. And it's like this whole thing. So if you're a K-pop fan, highly recommend. Kingdom is airing now, and it's obviously boy group. So it would be like, you know, One Direction versus NSYNC. Joey Fatone versus Zayn or something. But yeah, it's really fun. It's very like, you know, kind of pure hearted. It's just like for the sake of
entertainment. Interesting. This premise kind of reminds me of, do you remember the Disney Channel games where they're obviously not, they were actually competing. Like Amelia, in athletic stuff. Yeah.
Right. That is the appeal of it, is it's like these people who all kind of like work in the same industry, and you always wanted to like know what their friendship dynamic is like.
It's like the Marvel Cinematic Universe appeal. Where that's all the crossover. Wow. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So okay, I would say it's not for like the non K-pop fan, but if you are a fan of like any of the groups, or especially a couple of the groups, super fun. Okay. That's what I'm into now for any K-pop listeners. And then I have a question. Speaking of competition shows. As you know, I was very into the Great British Bake Off, and I've been trying to find similar viewing. And I had no idea that so many people were so into Top Chef. Like, is this a new thing? Has it always been like this huge, like Top Chef, whatever, came back like last week, the week before. And The Ringer had like 3 or 4 podcasts like covering, like they moved so that they could cover Top Chef on Friday. And I just had no idea that Top Chef culture was such a thing. Is that new? Am I just, are people bored?
I have not engaged in the Top Chef discourse. I'm more of like a beat Bobby Flay if I'm going to watch some cooking type show. But who here watches it? Kaya, do you? Amelia, do you? No. Kaya, don't you watch Top Chef, or you just work on the watch? On the
I just started watching it this season because Chris and Andy are so excited. So I was like, I guess I'll get into it. Like, I love reality TV. I've been loving competition shows. Shout out Survivor. So
what's the hook? What is the hook?
Padma Lakshmi is in it. She's cool.
She's great. And like, I'm like in theory into like the competitive cooking show. Like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, this is always my thing. There's like too many mean people. Like, if they're mean to each other, I don't want to watch it. So that's what I worry about is A, the judges being mean and not in a playful way, like on Bake Off, and B, the contestants being mean to each other. I fear that.
They're not that mean to each other. Padma is mean, but in a funny way. Okay. Like, this one guy on the first episode that I watched, this guy had like really tall hair. And Padma's like, what is going on with your hair?
Oh, okay. I'm okay with that. Some light ribbing. Yeah. Okay, maybe I'll, I know my mom is really into it. Maybe I'll try it to watch it with her for like, you know, the sake of bonding. And maybe I'll listen to the watch, and then I'll be like really all in on Top Chef in a couple weeks. And I'll be like, who was she?
Is it like the Great British Bake Off where they all have to bake something or cook something and then they get eliminated week by week?
Essentially,
yes.
Right?
From my understanding, yes. I've never seen Great British Bake Off, but from the one episode of Top Chef that I watched, someone cooked a dish and it was bad, and then he got sent home.
That makes sense. Like, who is the top chef? That the title lends itself to a singular logical chef. Right. Okay.
All right. I'll report back on my Top Chef journey.
Keep us please do.
Thank you.
Next one is a music streaming recommendation. And I swear this is not an ad. However, I wanted to plug. I feel like over the last year, we've talked on and off about my ebb and flow workout journey, which ebbs and it flows a lot. Anyway, I'm back in and I'm doing cardio for my new trend. I keep up with something for like 2 weeks at a time. Now I'm trying cardio. I will say the Spotify cardio playlist is just like from the app itself, has 100 songs. It's like over 5 hours. It is so good. And it also skips right to the fun part of every song. You know how like in some of those pump up music, like before the beat drops, you're just like running to just pretty much nothing and you want to die. It literally skips all that. And it's like essentially the main chorus and beat drop of every popular fun dance song.
That's
so you can
genius.
Never really feel like, you know, the lows of the song. It's incredible.
Wait, they can do that?
Oh my God. I don't know how. It's amazing. And then if you like skip a song, it just skips again to the fun part of the song. You never get the shitty at the beginning. Not shitty. Music is important. But the beginning and the end, which is harder to run to.
We should have them somehow do that to Tea Time, where like you can just skip to like the Masked Singer and Cringe Mode.
I was just going to say the like Masked
skip
Singer.
The other stuff.
Oh, yes. Oh my That's God. Very true. So check that out if you guys need some pump up music to work out in. Amelia, what are your streaming recommendations?
Well, I just do want to preface this. This week on The Masked Singer, it was freaking Nick Cannon who got unmasked. Which
wasn't
was
he the
like,
host?
Yes, but he had to be out for COVID reasons. And they had Niecy Nash filling in, and she was great. I really loved her. And then they gave him, it was such a lame costume. It was just him in a tracksuit and a mask from Party City. And he was just like, it's me. And
what?
It was, I know, it was so stupid. Wow. So it's fine. Whatever.
Disappointing.
Anyway, you know, a couple nights ago, I was like, I don't know what I want to watch. And I found this documentary that was on Netflix, and it was from like a year ago, and it's called Made You Look, which is which is a great name. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. And it's about art forgery, and it Ooh. Was, yeah, it's all about, it's a tight 90, and it is nice. About the one of the largest art forgery scandals in history. And some people say it's like the largest, and it takes a look at this gallery called the Knoedler Gallery, which is a super old like art institution in New York City. And now they don't exist anymore because of this whole scandal. But it's just, it's this wild ride of these forgeries of like this, some random man was creating works that looked a lot like Jackson Pollock. And
how hard could that be? Let's face it. Of all the people to pick, I'd pick Jackson Pollock. Sorry, continue.
Me too. Well, it's interesting because he focuses on that kind of mid-century contemporary art, which is very, you know, I mean, like, I understand why people think it's nice, but also mm-hmm. it's like, it isn't that hard to recreate. It's like mm-hmm. two blocks. Or in the case of Jackson Pollock, you just, you know, put a lot of paint.
Although, actually, maybe it's harder because Jackson Pollock, it's like very random.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't splatter it in the exact same way. I take it back. Jackson Pollock would be difficult.
Okay. But there were other examples where it was just like, are you serious? But anyway, and they swindled people out of millions of dollars. And there was an interesting point in the documentary where they're like, the gallery owner was Michael Hammer, who is Armie Hammer's father. Yes. And he was using it as his personal piggy bank. And it's wild. It was just like, oh my God, Armie Hammer is tangentially involved in all of this.
Whoa.
And like, yeah, it's a very interesting doc. So if you're into art, you know, yeah.
Or Armie Hammer. Yeah. Wow. All right. That's a good one.
Yeah. So now I'm like very much into art forgery. Like sometimes I don't know. I'm very weird in that, like, sometimes I focus on something and I can't, like, stop.
The hyperfixation of quarantine.
Yes.
Yeah, we've all
what
been
a
there.
Corner for you, Amelia.
Never Thank you.
I, yeah, all right. Cool. Why
Amelia
not?
Amelia gets arrested in, like, 10 years for art forgery, and they're like, it all started here.
Truly. And then I've been doing, like, the weekly watch with my parents. We love this show called Tough as Nails. And honestly, it's a reality competition show, but I think, Kate, you could watch it because everyone on the show is so nice. They are all, it's like Great British Bake Off people, but they're blue collar workers who do these blue collar tasks every week. Like this past week they had to like put drywall on a frame, a house frame, and then they like they've had to carry these slime eels to a bin. It's just like a lot of really random work like that. But they're all they're just like so nice, salt of the earth people. And they all have like these blue collar nicknames. Like there's like Eyebrows and Swifty and Knuckles. Like
Swifty.
But it's like, it's obviously a competition and they want to win, but they're so supportive of each other. And then you also Aww. Admire them for being just like so hardworking. You see the sweat dripping off their faces. It's like, I watch this and I'm like, I want to build a piping system too. and then I've changed my mind. But it's by the guy who does The Amazing Race. I think his name is Phil Keough. He hosts it and stuff. It's very nice. Cool. And then also, we've been watching Mighty Ducks Game Changers, which, you know, it's a bit of a slow burn. And for whatever reason, Disney Plus has decided with their shows, with their original content, to not do a batch and just release it. Mm-hmm. But they've decided to do week by week by week.
And that bugs me.
It is really tough sometimes.
Yeah.
It's Netflix, really tough.
Netflix trained us to get used to the binge model. And it's hard for me to go back.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And for some shows, I think it does work. Like I feel like Black Widow, but the Red Witch one. What was
WandaVision?
Thank you. I already forgot the name. That's really sad. It works for that because that's like compelling mm-hmm. and, you know, suspenseful. But this one is just like, it's slow. It's slow. Mm-hmm. And you have to wait to build up the characters. And the main guy, Gordon Bombay, who is big in the other three movies, is still kind of a non-factor. And like, I love Lauren Graham and I think she's so likable, but it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah.
Very tough. Would you recommend it or is this just what we're watching this month?
Yeah. You know what, Greg? Thank you for pointing that out. I think you can skip it for now, but wait like maybe 3 more weeks.
There you go. Yeah.
And then watch it. Watch it in a bath.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Smart.
Mm-hmm. Amelia, I'm proud of us. We did not mention the S word one time in this category.
Oh, I mean, given Kaya that did. Kaya mentioned it.
Right.
She just said, yay, Survivor.
We'll try again next week. All right. Next category, it's our mashup. It's relationship news, not worth the tea, and this week in social media. Pretty short category, very slow week. Kate, what do you got?
All right. So on Twitter this week, some Bridgerton casting news had a lot of people sharing a lot of opinions. And the big news is that Regé Jean Page, who played the Duke that everyone was obviously obsessed with and thirsting over on Bridgerton, will not be returning for season 2. So, you know, the first reaction was like, this is horrible. Mm-hmm. Why would I watch if he's not on it? Which was also my knee-jerk reaction as well. But then, you know, all this other stuff came out. People were like, he's not even really in the next book. Like, he would be barely in the season. Mm-hmm. Which my reaction was like, okay, write him in. Like, yeah. I don't know what to tell you. You know, day by day, people just kept being like, you know, people came. I think The Hollywood Reporter came out and they were like, they offered him $50,000 per guest episode. And it's kind of turned into like kind of shaming him and like, who does this guy think he is? Like, why didn't he return to the show that like made him a thing? And this is what I would like to say. He's a superstar. He is the most attractive human to walk the earth, probably. And he's probably going to go play fucking James Bond or something. Or he's going to be an Avenger. Like, so can we relax? Like, he knows his worth. He's barely in the next season. He's going to leave the boring Bridgerton boy who is the star of the next season to just fend for himself. Mm-hmm. And like, it's fine. Like, let him go be an Avenger or something. You know, like he has, there are bigger things for him and we just need to relax and get over it. That's how I feel.
I mean, I love that, but also I just, you know, I'm worried for him. I'm worried for him, though, because Misha Barton, anyone remember that?
Yes.
I love Misha Barton, but...
Two of a kind.
Yeah, so very similar.
Oh, my God.
It's true. I mean, there's like the Dan Stevens, Downton Abbey thing that people were talking about. But I just like, I feel like you know that he's going to be a superstar. Mm. He's already hosted SNL. Like, I just feel like his trajectory is so steep that like he just doesn't need Bridgerton anymore. I wish he would be on it. I will miss him. I may not watch the next season, which actually my point being, they just need to cast another sexy new superstar to be the love interest for the guy. You know, like that's what we need to do. Right. We need to pull in a girl now who's like incredible, has the most beautiful face ever created, incredible sex appeal. And then like she can be the superstar of the next season. We can be obsessed with her and then she can leave and be a star. Like that needs to be, we don't need to count on anyone who's already on the show to carry this. We need to bring in someone else to fill his shoes. That's how I feel.
That's fair. Speaking of Bridgerton / SNL, you mentioned it first. It's a perfect time to talk about some really big news in Pete Davidson's life, which is that he moved out of his mom's basement. Finally, yay! Which is like really exciting. He was living in Staten Island with his mom for the last year. He's done like a lot of videos and content around his basement level living situation, which was working out really well, but he is moving onwards and upwards. He moved out of his mom's house. He paid $1.2 million to now be in a condo on the North Shore of Staten Island. So actually still on Staten Island, which I'm kind of surprised by, but maybe I think he really likes Staten Island and he probably wants to get out of the Manhattan, you know, bustling city. Not sure. I've been there like five times. But anyway, I'm looking at photos of his condo. I'll send it to you guys now. It's currently maybe owned by someone who's not like Pete Davidson. Very colorful. The walls are like purple and pink and all that stuff. But yeah, it's like a cute two bed, two and a half bath, you know, great skyline. And we're just really happy for Pete Davidson, you know, moving onwards and upwards, right, guys?
This is the trajectory that I'm manifesting for myself when I move out of my parents' house. Where I've been living this past year, I would also like to spend $1 million on a condo. Maybe not on Staten Island, but it's like from, you know, parents' house to your own place.
Good for him.
That's where we're going, right, Amelia?
Yes, that's right. Following in the footsteps of Pete Davidson.
Yes.
Okay, what else do we got? Kate?
Taylor Swift, this is going to be airing on a Friday. So today, Taylor Swift dropped her Fearless re-release where she re-recorded all of her songs from Fearless. She added a few songs from the vault. So this is going to be old news in Taylor Swift land. But because we're recording on a Thursday, I want to talk about the song she released this week, which is called Mr. Perfectly Fine. And it's about Joe Jonas. Everyone knows it's about Joe Jonas. That's who she was dating at the time. Mm. It's very obvious. The lyrics are just scathing at times.
Ooh.
And it's a good song. It's my favorite of her recent releases, I would say.
Oh.
Very catchy. And so Sophie Turner, who we love, who I miss talking about actually a lot on this podcast. I miss her like relatable chaos. She posted the song on Instagram, the Spotify link, and she said, "It's not a bop." Which just calls to mind a beautiful image of Sophie Turner, new mom, just like bopping around her house to Mr. Perfectly Fine. Joe just like trying to eat his cereal at the breakfast table, just like, God damn it. So people were obviously loved this. They were tweeting about it. They were like, Sophie Turner is a Swiftie first and Joe Jonas's wife second. And I just really enjoy that she's just like the most successful fangirl. Like she has never been quiet about being a Jonas Brothers fan before she married Joe Jonas. She is not quiet about being a Taylor Swift fan, despite the fact that she married Joe Jonas. And yeah, so she like, you know, Taylor Swift sent them baby presents for, I believe, is it Willa? Is that the baby's name?
Yeah, that's what it's
And then she has, you know, the lyrics in Invisible String where she's like, for the boys who broke my heart, now I send their babies presents. So, like people are bringing that back.
Yeah.
So Taylor responded to Sophie. She was like, forever bending the knee for the Queen of the North. Classic Game of Thrones reference. And yeah, I just love Sophie Turner. I just was so happy to see her on my feed again. I miss her.
I agree. Yeah. On my feed is something a little different, but I really want to talk about it. It's been around actually for a while. This is not a new Instagram account, but like it makes its waves on Instagram and then TikTok picks it up and like reacts to the Instagram and then blows up there too. And I'm talking about the Instagram Siblings Are Dating. And I'm actually really shocked we have not touched on this yet in this pod. This feels like really ripe for tea time picking. So it's self-explanatory, but it essentially takes photos of either a couple or a pair of siblings, puts it out there, and you vote if you think that they're siblings or if you think they're dating. And it's confusing, really confusing, because they're faces are really close to one another, or they have an identical face and they're dating, or the guy's arm is a little low, but they're siblings. It's all kind of, it's not as obvious as you think it would be. Apparently, I'm looking at this Instagram, you say you can email a photo of yourself or get permission from the people that you're posting, which is good because this would be like really humiliating if you had no say over whether you were voted on. Anyway, it has about like almost a million followers on Instagram. And then again, TikTok picks it up and just like, you know, reacts to it as well. And they're really funny videos. What are your guys' thoughts on the Siblings Are Dating Instagram?
I've seen a lot of TikToks on this. There are some very funny people who like will show it to their spouse and their spouse every time is like, oh my God, like this is killing me inside. But I think you can actually hack it. Like if they look alike, then they're probably dating. If the hand placement, if the hand placement is questionable, they're probably siblings.
That's like, troubling.
They try to play like these two. I'm looking at these two that are like cuddled up on a pool floor. I know they're going to be dating. Let's see. Oh, actually they're sibling. Oh, that's what I meant.
Oh, I see the one you're talking about.
I confused myself. But yeah, so like if they're in a pose that looks like a prom pose or like they're just like too close at a club, like they're probably siblings.
Or you know what? On the other hand, the pose could go all the way around and be like, it's a two people like back to back like this and they're dating or like they're, you know, posing really far apart, really awkwardly. And they're also dating, which I don't really know how to pose either.
It's it's counterintuitive. So like they try to throw you off and try to horrify you. Yeah. And unfortunately it does work. So some of these
it gets me every time. Really, I just can, I don't know. I know that I'm going to be tricked and then I still am. Mm-hmm. It's very puzzling.
It's easy to overthink it.
Oh, God, Amelia, have you really browsed funny. Siblings or dating?
I have. I mean, I remember looking at this like a long time ago because I feel like there was like a Tumblr when you remember when Tumblr was really big, devoted to it. And I don't, and I know some people who've not necessarily like submitted themselves, but like, you know, you've seen so many captions on, but could, on Instagram and just like,
everyone knows some people.
Yeah. Who just like look like, you know, they could be siblings, but they're actually dating, which is funny.
Yeah, so you guys check that out if you're curious. Or and not. Then lastly, Amelia, hush. Amelia, what do you got?
This will be really quick, but the new Powerpuff Girls reboot was spotted filming. And oh my God, yikes. That's all I have to say about, no offense. I mean, I think it could be fine. I just think they should have left it as a cartoon. The outfits are like someone just went to a wardrobe department and was like, here's some two pieces of fabric. Can you make a Powerpuff Girls outfit out of this? I mean, they are just $5 bin at
Do you think
Sears.
That's a purposeful, like I saw these and were immediately like, they're going to be like making some sort of like self-referencing joke. Like, I feel like,
maybe
I feel like these aren't the real things and they're going to be like go to a party and dress up as something and like be in these costumes. It's hard to imagine them.
I'm worried.
Like earnestly wearing these.
That's that, you know what, you have a really good point. I'm hoping that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we never know. I imagine it will be bad, but that would be my guess. But who knows?
Who knows?
Honestly, I kind of would like someone to like kind of lean into the more costumey parts of it. Like, I don't want them fighting crime in black leather jackets. That's not the Powerpuff Girls.
No, sure. Right. That is definitely true. And I just think it's interesting. It's a CW, I guess, show. Maybe it obviously has not been, you know, 100% like, we're doing it, but they're filming the pilot. And I just, you know, I appreciate CW really leaning into these comic book kind of genres. And I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about one right now.
Yeah, great segue.
That is a perfect transition, Amelia. Well done.
Thank you.
Shall we? Shall we do this?
Yes.
Okay. Next category is Cringe Mode, Josie and the Pussycats, a 2001 classic. It's the anniversary this month, so we're covering it. We're discussing. Kate, want to take us through the plot?
Josie and the Pussycats, I had never seen this movie, which is a crime, honestly. Once I watched it, I was like, how had I never seen this?
Wow.
So Josie and the Pussycats is based on the characters from the Archie comics. It was like the Riverdale, like predecessor, basically. And there's this girl band led by Josie, played by Rachel Lee Cook. And they get recruited basically by this like these evil villains sort of masquerading as a record label. And this record label wants to take over the world by influencing the minds of teens via subliminal messaging. And so they do this via pop stars. So they had this boy group that they had been like putting subliminal messages in their pop songs. The boy group like was onto them, figured it out. So they crashed their plane. So they needed a new group. They pick up Josie and the Pussycats from the small town of Riverdale. You know, there's some drama. They want to push Josie as the front woman. Her friends are sad about it. It's Tara Reid and Rosario Dawson, who are the other members of the group, whose names I don't know, which is probably why they wanted Josie to be the lead. ultimately they defeat sort of the evil corporation and everyone, you know, gets to be themselves and love the music they love.
Nice. Good job. The other two are Melody and Valerie, FYI. But we probably will call them Tara Reid and Rosario Dawson.
If you paid me.
Okay, let's do some highlights. Kate, what do you got?
I really liked the like self-referential, like fourth wall breaking of this movie. I initially like barely even knew that it was from like the Archie comic books until I saw the Riverdale sign pop up. And then I was like, oh, right. but the movie is like, it just kind of is happy to make fun of itself. So the first time is when Missy Pyle is on the plane with them. And she's like kind of this very side character. She's like the brother's girlfriend. And someone goes like, why are you even here? And she goes, I'm here because I was in the comic book, which is just classic. And then at the end of the movie, you know, the whole thing is, again, about like putting subliminal messages in songs and in pop culture. And at one point, they're talking about subliminal messaging and how they're pivoting from, because the pop music thing didn't work, they're going to pivot to movies because they found that subliminal messaging in movies is more effective. And at that exact point, like words pop up on the screen that say Josie and the Pussycats is the greatest movie of all time. And then it goes away. And I was like, that was great. Oh, that was good. So yeah, I found it very fun, very playful.
Yeah,
I agree. I think the whole consumerism and subliminal messaging thing, it was so, I don't know, it was done in such a way that was like really funny, and they poked fun at it, and it wasn't like totally overt that this is bad. It was, I don't know. They just did it in a way or in a tone that made it like fun to watch and not like I've been hit over the head with this. And I remember watching this and like being really affected that like there's subliminal messaging in music I listened to for like 2 months. That was a little scary, but you know, all in all, good stuff.
Yeah, it's a little spooky premise, which I will talk about later. Also, a highlight is there's a lot of really good montages. We always dock movies when there's a perfect opportunity to do a montage. This movie capitalized on all of them. There's like 5 separate montages. And then also like there's like music videos kind of in the middle. Again, very entertaining. There's like
perfect.
The makeover montage where they all, you know, get made over to be like real pop stars. There's like photo shoot montages. Montages of them blowing up and doing press and like on this crazy circuit. So really like it. And yeah, we just love a good montage at tea time.
Yes, every time.
What else is a highlight, Kate?
The love interest for me, I'll talk about him in a minute. He did not do it for me. However, there is one trope in this movie that works every fucking time, no matter how horrible the love interest is, how lukewarm I am for him. It's the guy has to adjust something at the back of the dress and there's sexual tension while he does it trope.
Yes.
Josie's getting ready for this party. She's got this backless dress on that the label sent to her. The guy walks into the room, don't know his name, didn't bother to learn it. And she's
Alan M.
Why does he have a last initial?
I don't know.
Is it just like that in the comments? I'm like, there's only one Alan.
Why? I think they explained it, but I don't remember.
It's like he's on The Bachelor. Okay, so he walks in. She's like, hey, there's like a chain that I can't get at the back of the dress, which I'm like, yes, Josie, there is. And so he walks behind her. She's got this back with his like hands are, you know, hovering over her exposed back. She's staring forward. She's like, what's going on? He's like staring at her neck, staring at her back, like obsessing over her. Very slowly does the chain. There's like awkward silence, but it's like sexy awkward silence. And we see this all the time. Movies and TV shows do this constantly, you know, button up my dress, zip up my dress, put the necklace on me. And I just want to say it's a banger and it's good every time.
Absolutely. Or on the flip side, it's like you adjust a tie or a bow tie and you're like real close and it's like, you know, inches away. I love that too. That's a
the
great
sexual
call-out.
Tension, it hits every time.
It's palpable. Yeah, totally.
Amelia, what's a highlight for you?
I know we're going to talk about the songs a little more in the lightning round, but I had this like a CD, like a compact disc.
Me too.
Yes. Of this soundtrack. And I would play it a lot. And honestly, these songs are bangers.
They are.
They're really good. And I was watching this movie and I found myself like singing along because I remember the lyrics, because the songs are actually really good.
They're fucking great. I did too. Those 3 small words, 6 long hours, 5 long days. Oh my God. Just all floods back
to
you.
They're catchy. The lyrics are fun. I mean, I'm not, you know, freaking Robin Thicke on The Masked Singer pretending that I know anything about music. But I will say that I will be adding them to my playlist. Like, I honestly watch this soundtrack become number one on my Spotify rap. Like, I'm predicting it now.
Agreed. I'm almost kind of sad. And probably at the time, I thought they were like a legitimate pop group. It turns out none of them know how to play instruments or sing. But just the suspension of disbelief, like they could be a real pop girl group. They're freaking great. I love them. Okay, a highlight for me at the end of the movie. So like Kate said, they try to like actually kill this boy band that realized that all this shady stuff was happening. So they crash their plane. And then you don't really, There's little touches of their presence, but I don't know exactly what or what happened or where they are. At the end of the movie, when Josie and the Pussycats are like fighting up against the corporate evil overlords, whatever, Dujour comes back from the shadows and they're like beaten up. Like half of them are just like broken and they're in full body casts, including the poor monkey that they travel with. He's like in a body cast. But the reveal that they are still alive and they're going to help take down the evil like music record label, whatever, is freaking great. I love that they survived that plane crash. And it was just a great reveal having them come out of nowhere at the very end.
It's also really funny because like they very obviously like either couldn't get or didn't want to pay for the three biggest names in the boy band. So those are the ones that are, have the full body cast where you can't see their face. And
that's
then it's like
so
the
true.
One nameless Whoa. Actor who does like all the talking. And the other three, it's like the guy from Buffy, what's his face? And then the guy from Scrubs and then another guy. Neither of
them. Donald Faison, Breckenmeyer, and Seth Green.
Thank you.
God bless.
Appreciate it. A professional. But they like obviously like didn't want to pay them, I guess, for another scene. And so they just are like all in full body cast and you can't see their faces. And then like the one rando is the one who's like speaks for Dujour at the end.
Wow. I thought that was a creative choice, but you always help me stay on it. Nice. Okay, last one, Amelia.
I just want to say quickly, justice for Rachel Lee Cook. You know, she was big in the late 90s, early 2000s. She is from Minneapolis, so I have no choice but to stan. and you know what? I'm upset. I'm happy that she is going to be in the new Netflix He's All That.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She?
Yeah, oh, that would make sense. That would make sense.
As what's her face's mom,
Allison Ray?
Yes. Which honestly, I'd rather stare into the face of Satan for eternity than watch Allison Ray attempt to act. But
I would rather have Rachel Lee Cook just reprise her exact role and just pretend to be a teenager in high
Same.
School.
Same. I know. Right. It's a struggle, but she's
At
so
least
cute.
She's getting paid,
so
you guys.
Cute.
That's At true. Least she's getting paid.
At least she's That's getting true. Paid. That is, you're 100% correct.
Right. All right, let's do some lowlights. Kate, go ahead.
I understand that the whole point of this movie is like the product placement. Like it's, you know, it's, I mean, it literally it's like the point of the movie is there's product placement everywhere. And like, that's how we, it's like very meta. But it's like also real product placement in this movie. And it, like they're on a jet and the jet plane is like all Target branded. She's in a hotel room and the whole hotel room is McDonald's. Like the other hotel room is like Maybelline or Revlon
and
or
Target.
Something. Target is everywhere. McDonald's is everywhere. And like, I get it. And like, it's funny and it works. But after a certain point, I was like, okay, like it's Target paid you so much money to be in this movie. And like, you're kind of like, it works, but it's also like, you're kind of going back on the whole point of the movie, but it was funny and it's entertaining. My other low light, like I mentioned above, love interest sucks. Like did not have an ounce of chemistry in his body, despite the back of the dress scene. I have only ever seen him on the failed ABC drama Revenge.
He looks like Joe Alwyn to me. I thought he was
him
for
my
like
God.
1 minute.
Wow,
but yeah,
very,
it does.
Very tough look for Joe Alwyn. It's like if Joe Alwyn got stretched and also came from like Southern Indiana. He was not it for me. Apologies if he has stands out there. He seems like he's done a lot of television. So sure. Yeah, not great.
Agreed. There's also, you know, the three bandmates, Rachel Lee Cook, Tara Reid, and Rosario Dawson. This is like a real trope back in the day. And watching it again, I'm like, oh my God, it's so terrible. There's like the one dumb, mostly typically blonde female character in the movie that is like so incredibly stupid. And it's like played for laughs, I think. But like watching Tara Reid be... because she's also had a shit time in Hollywood. Amelia, I'm sure you could speak more to this. I know very little about it, but I know she was like, she had a tough go of it. Her character is just, played really stupid and like really ditzy in the movie. And it just like really doesn't work. And it, I don't know. I'm sure it,
I
mean,
gets
it worked
old
back
fast.
Then. Yeah, I agree. It's like Karen Smith from Mean Girls falling back to her. That was one of like, I think the last times that hopefully it was done, because it's just really not great to watch.
It's just so uncreative. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I agree. Plus, she's got acting chops, I think. Give her something to work with. Yeah. And then my last low light is, you guys, there are some real thriller moments to this movie. that are very sinister. And I remember at the time watching it being kind of scared. There's a moment where like Tara Reid's in the shower and then this creepy, creepy music. And then she opens up the shower and there's a message that it turns out Du Jour has written in lipstick yeah. on the mirror, but it's like, beware of the music. And they kind of appear as shadows a little bit like throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. You don't know what it, I mean, now watching it as an adult, you're like, okay, yeah. But I don't know, it was a little scary. And it was a pretty sinister movie at times. And I did not sign up for that. I kind of forgot. Thought it was pure pop music movie, and it was not.
No. I fast forwarded through the shower scene.
Kate, why? You've never even seen it.
Well, as soon as I saw the shadowy figure in the scary music, I was like,
oh
no.
My God.
Such a baby.
It's just a reflex. I don't even think about it. I'm like, I don't need this right now.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay, let's do what has aged the best and the worst, Kate.
What has aged the best was Josie's haircut in this movie. The red flipped out bob is the best extinct hairstyle of the aughts. And if TikTok is yes. going to bring anything back, I want them to bring this back. It's just like the layered, classic layered bob, but like you have the little like straightener flicks that you would like set with hairspray. Yes. And it's so cute and really fun and kind of like preceded Paramore, but like kind of the Paramore energy where it's like, I'm cool and hip, but I'm also cute and fun. And I just think, honestly, genuinely think it needs to come back. I would love to see the TikTok girls rocking this hairstyle.
Agreed. Bad for your ends, but good for us.
Yes, true. Speaking of TikTok, there are a bunch of girl bands on TikTok that have become like TikTok famous that are very much formed in like the Josie and the Pussycats image. Like, the, you know, and they're all, you know, very diverse, very like fun outfits, sort of like the rock punk music. But I of course don't have any at the top of my brain because I did so much preparation for this podcast. But there are several that I follow and that I have on my feed that just like are very much just like similar energy, have the fun lead singer, have the girl who does drums, the girl on guitar. And it's yeah. great. We need to bring back the girl band.
I agree. What else?
Age the worst. It's just a 2001 movie and there's just like sort of the humor of the times in it. It's not that bad. It's definitely not as bad as some of the other 2000 movies we've watched. But like, you know, at the beginning, there's like a boy who's a fan of the boy band and he's like, I see him as my brothers. They're like, I love him like my brothers. I'm like, okay, can we not shame the boy for liking a boy band? And then it's like, you know, just stuff here and there. And then at the end of the movie, like the villains are exposed as like having all these insecurities about themselves. And like, there's the message is like, you know, be free to be you. And like, there are people out there for everyone, blah, blah, blah. But also like, they're like, oh, look at the freaks. Like the freaks found each other. I'm like, okay, that kind of goes against the whole message that we were working towards.
Yeah.
Which is, it's fine. It's not that bad. But there were a couple times where I was like, oh, right, this was made in 2001.
Yeah.
So.
Agreed. Oh, God. Amelia, what do you have?
I just want to say, I forgot that this movie started out with like a whole Du Jour boy band scene with the fans and them singing and on the plane. But I just want to say that Du Jour did an amazing spoof of a boy band 15 years before Popstar Never Stop Stopping perfected it into an entire movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. I mean, they predicted the Justin Bieber Capuchin Monkey bit. I know there are other parts to it as well, you know, how they're all trying to usurp each other and with like, that was my look. And I don't know. It was just, it's very funny how well they predicted boy bands.
And also very believable. If those men were not actual actors, I could see them being in a legitimate boy band together. Okay, what do you have for another best? What's aged the best?
So I was looking at the Wikipedia page of this movie, and apparently it was a box office bomb when it was first released, which, I mean, I can understand, but it's too bad because this movie actually really, in my opinion, holds up. You know, when you compare it to other movies released around this time, or even like John Tucker Must Die. I mean, I was truly laughing during this film.
It's a cult favorite.
It is. And that's what Wikipedia said. And I think, you know, people are finally seeing its genius. It's a really just a funny movie. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun.
Loved, I would have loved to see the songs in a movie theater, blasting from the speakers. Yeah, it would have been a fun experience. Also, it fits into this category because just like in the year 2021, it's an insane thought experiment to like picture her in this movie. But Beyonce auditioned for the role of Valerie, which went to Rosario Dawson. But she was too like quiet and shy. And it was the casting director was looking for a comedic actress, whatever. It's just so crazy to think that Beyonce now could have been in this role. Like, just imagine the possibilities of like watching her in this movie.
Wow.
It's wild.
I would have loved to watch her in this and then do like a Dreamgirls like double feature, like her first like pop star role and then Dreamgirls would have been great. Although Rosario Dawson is great.
She is great. I just would have loved Beyonce as like she was a pop star and she was kind of the third as opposed to she is kind of the Rachel Lee Cook.
Right.
Right.
IRL. She would have been the Michelle in this movie. Bummer. We didn't get to see that.
Bummer. Okay. And then just lastly, again, it has aged the best only because it's like a 2001 relic to say this sentence. But Tara Reid and Carson Daly met on the set because he's in this movie for like 5 minutes and they started dating after. And it's just to think about those two together brings me back to a time of a long, long time ago. It's just wild to think about.
That's so cute because their characters like get together kind of in the movie when he's like trying to kill her.
Yeah.
Yes. Weird movie. We don't need to explain why.
All right. Quickly, let's do MVPs. Kate, who is your MVP for this movie?
My MVP was in our last Cringe Month choice. We did not mean to do it this way, but it turned out to be Alan Cumming Month on Tea Time.
Yes.
Sure. Sure. Listen, he was born to play like the campy, over-the-top villain, both in Spy Kids and in this movie. Yeah. It's called Range. He has this hair, like horrible hair, ridiculous accent. He is just like this really like gross music exec who like, you know, takes advantage of these girls and like, you know, tries to conquer the world. And he's just great. It's just, he was born to do this.
I agree.
He's so funny.
I know, he's
so
really funny.
Give him more roles. He has the range. Oh my God.
As Twitter has been saying this week, Alan Cumming always understands the assignment.
He does. That's perfect. Oh my God.
Amelia, who is your MVP?
Writer director team of Harry Elfont and Deborah Kaplan. They did a great job. This movie, again, I really don't have any bad things to say about this movie. And I guess they also, I mean, they've done other stuff, but they worked together on Can't Hardly Wait before they did this movie. So clearly they know the teen genre. and that too. Yeah.
They leveled up.
Exactly.
My MVP, Amelia, I know you will agree in some way, is just the music itself.
Yes.
It's great. Learned all the lyrics. I was just listening to it this morning just for kicks, and it's really good. That's my pick. Oh, Amelia, one last one. One last pick for MVP from you.
And
what is
also,
it?
On that note, too, the music. There's a great sync that they do because it's not Rachel Lee Cook's voice, but I personally think she does a great job pretending that it's her voice. It fooled me. And it's Kay Hanley of Letters to Cleo. So do you remember the song at the end of 10 Things I Hate About You? I Want You to Want Me. It's that girl's voice. Were they the girl and the band on top of the school where they're singing? Yeah, that's them. So
nice. Yeah, Letters to Cleo is cool.
Great
guys,
band.
Speaking of the end of this movie, also the blooper reel. We love a blooper reel on Tea Time.
Yeah.
And they did the 2001 blooper reel. So love that.
Yeah. All right, quickly, let's do the lightning round. What is the most 2001 thing about this movie, Kate?
It's got to be the body glitter for me. Josie wore that body glitter all down her sternum and cleavage at this party, like a formal party. And I was like, yeah, it's 2001.
Yeah. Amelia? What's your answer?
I would say the low-rise flares with platform flip-flops.
Yep.
That was a big thing,
My pick is the three of them are in kind of the same theme but different iterations of like the identical outfit, and the favorite thing to do in my childhood was just pick which one was my favorite. Destiny's Child did it. Whatever. That's my pick. Okay, what is the worst song, Amelia?
Honestly, I love all the songs. I guess the actual real songs on this soundtrack, like Real Wild Child and Money, like, you know, the Beatles, who cares? Those are the worst songs.
I agree. You're right. We have to talk about backdoor lover.
Yes, we do. Oh my God.
We almost made it through the segment without doing it. So the movie starts out, like Amelia said, with this introduction to Du Jour, which is like the huge boy band at the time. And they're singing a song called Backdoor Lover, which is about exactly what you think it's about. And it is very explicit. And obviously, it's just a riff on, like, you know, these young kids like singing these boy band songs and not knowing what they're about. But it's honestly pretty funny. And you're so right about like preceding pop star Never Stop Stopping, because that is absolutely like an Andy Samberg song.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the Du Jour songs are the worst part of this. I like their vibe, but don't like the music that they...
Really bold choice to lead with Backdoor Lover, though, into this movie. I was like, wow. Okay.
Agreed. Agreed. What is the best song? My pick is Three Small Words. I like almost sang it earlier in this category. I feel like that's self-explanatory.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Amelia.
I can't choose.
That's fine. Honestly, I agree.
Yep.
Okay. What's the best cameo / small role that went to a now known actor, Kate?
I want to say that there are two actresses in this movie that have like the exact same energy, and it's Missy Pyle and Parker Posey. And they both are just like these comedic villainous actresses. They're always like this sort of weird, weirdly sexy, like villain sort of henchwoman in all these movies. And I was almost confused by having them in the same movie, because either one of them could have just like swapped roles and done the exact same thing. Missy Pyle is less of a villain. She's just kind of a side character, but they just kind of have that like weird energy. And I love them both. And it was just an embarrassment of riches to have them both in this movie.
I agree. They have the same vibe. My pick is, he appears for 20 seconds. It's Eugene Levy, which he was well known at the time. He was big American Pie moment, also for Tara Reid. But yeah, he appears for 20 seconds in some intro video. And I'm like, oh my God, Eugene Levy. It's nice to see him all, you know, a little bit younger.
It's like such a like star role. Like it's very, you're very clearly supposed to be like, oh my God, they got Eugene Levy for this movie. And watching it now, it was like the George Clooney bit in Spy Kids. Like, you know, where it, like it's a cameo at the last minute. Like he plays himself in this like instructional video. And I was like, Eugene Levy? Like, what? sure.
Agreed. Okay, let's keep moving. Last category is Tea Time's unanswerable questions. Amelia, I love the vibe of yours. I love talking about like a non-pop culture related thing at the end of this pod.
Thank you.
What's your question?
Okay, so with everyone getting vaccinated, I hope everyone listening is signing up to get vaccinated. Where is your next dream travel destination? Because I feel like we've all been cooped up with restrictions and now we're just like, life is short. I want to do something.
Agreed. Kate, what's your pick?
I mean, very boring. I would like to get back to LA at some point.
That's your ideal dream travel destination?
I mean, it's hard to think beyond the ones that I've like been waiting for a year. The other one that I've been waiting for is the Spotify employee trip to Sweden. Ooh. I was promised over a year ago, Tea Time company sponsored trip to Sweden. Tea Time takes Sweden, like very Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Oh my God.
And we have not had that experience yet. So the Tea Time Sweden trip is the one I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, we should do like Mamma Mia that week or something, you know, like ABBA, Swedish icon.
Always thinking about content.
You know how I do. You know what I really want to travel to? I have this dream of being poolside or beachside, doesn't matter, somewhere warm. And someone brings me a pina colada, like in a glass that has like a pineapple cut in it. Oh, I've been thinking about that for so long. I've never even like had that experience fully, but I just dream that there are places like that that will do that. And that just sounds so nice. Like something cold when you're sitting on somewhere warm, you know?
I mean, you live
in
LA, so
man, it's different.
Like you could like, have that experience right now.
Are you joking me? Go to Santa Monica Beach, get knife? No, that's my dream. Amelia, what's your answer for this?
I do think that sounds really nice with the pina colada. That sounds wonderful. It sounds like, oh my God, like falling asleep in the sun. Oh my God, like walking into the ocean. Oh my. And yes, I know you can do that in Santa Monica, but let's just, I'm thinking
you,
like
you
Fiji
shouldn't,
or something.
Different vibe.
Don't go in the water
don't
there.
Do that. Anywhere. Like that takes a day to get to, you know, just anywhere.
Before we started recording, Amelia was getting really hype about the Minnesota State Fair. So that's, I assume that that's on your list.
And that too, of course, obviously, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
My question, and it's also like a quarantine kind of related question, and I will say a little behind the scenes of those listening, sometimes when we have nothing to check in with and it's like Thursday morning or Wednesday night, I always suggest Tea Time checks in with Tea Time and we do a little like, how are we intro, and it always gets shut down. Kate and Amelia always have actually something creative to do instead, but I always suggest it. Just like a checking in with ourselves. But anyway, so I like the vibe of these questions. My question for you guys is, what is like our hair situation now that we're kind of getting on the other side of the world? Because Kate, you've gone through a big hair transformation. Amelia, you too. Your hair is so freaking long now. And I feel like in the beginning of quarantine, we're like, we could do anything. We could chop it off. We could dye it. We could. And now we're like approaching the time where we have to reemerge into society. It reminded me, Chrissy Teigen just dyed her hair pink like this week. Oh. Granted, she can change it at a moment's notice. But what are you guys doing now that we're like kind of on the other side, getting to the other side? Kate?
Are you asking because you feel pressure to be like come out of quarantine like a butterfly, like not yes. the same person that you were?
Yes.
Yeah. I get that too. I think I'm probably going to go back to straightening my hair.
Really? But you get so much attention on your curls.
Yeah.
But that's not in real life. They're just really labor intensive. We'll see. I also might just chop it all off.
Oh my God.
I think actually I probably will cut it like significantly after my brother's wedding in October, but that's like my journey. How You've heard so much about my hair. You don't care. What are you guys going to do?
Everybody cares about your hair. That's Seriously. The point of the question.
Yeah, exactly.
Amelia, what are you going to do? Are you going to chop it?
I want to because this is like, oh my God, it's like wearing a heavy blanket. And also it's just like, you know, when your hair gets long enough to a point where it's just like, it just doesn't look fresh. It's just like, this is just stagnant and probably dying. And I feel like I've more than reached this part and should just chop some of it off. I'd like to donate it to, you know, Locks of Love, but as much as I want to, I also am like, whoo, this is a lot of hair. It's a lot of hair to donate, and I don't know if I can do it.
So. Amelia, you and I feel like we go on the same journey where like our hair's short and then we spend a long time growing it out. And then as soon as it's long, we're like, actually, I would like it to be short. So then you spend most of your life in the awkward growing out process where it's neither long nor short, and it never looks like you want. So
never.
I'm with you too, where I'm like, maybe I should enjoy it while it's really long. But then I know as soon as I start having to go into the office every day and style it every day, I'm going to be like, this cannot continue.
Exactly.
So we're in the same boat. I might donate mine too. We'll see. Liz, what are you going to do?
Man, I can't do anything with my hair. It just sits there no matter what I do.
You guys have like, good.
Like hair to work with. Mine has just looked the same since I was in the eighth grade.
You should dye it. You should go blonde. Blondeless,
you know,
Kelly.
I've been told that, but I've never dyed my hair. So, like, I don't know. What I mean, it never goes
try
back
it.
To the...
It's just hair.
I mean, I have dumb brown hair. I don't know what I'm... It's not precious in any way, but...
You can't go through life never having dyed your hair.
I like your hair color. But
Amelia?
If you want
it... I do too, Amelia.
No, I didn't mean it like God that. I'm just saying that, you know, if I think it's a beautiful chocolatey brown. And I, my only thought for you is that if you were to dye it platinum, you know what happened. You've seen America's Next Top Model.
I have.
What? Did it fall out?
It burned some girl's scalp.
Yeah. Don't scare her out.
Vampire-like skin. I'm not going platinum. I would maybe lighten it to make me
like a Lauren Conrad, like beach ombre? Blonde style. That's what I'm seeing. For
that
you.
Requires bravery, which I don't know that I have. But anyway, we'll see. Okay, let's wrap it up. Kate, what's your final question?
My question is based on a lot of prompt tweets that were circulating Twitter this week. It started out and said, who plays your parents in your biopic? And you were supposed to quote tweet it with two pictures of actors or actresses that you felt either like looked like your parents, had the vibe of your parents, or you just wanted to play your parents in your biopic. And then off of that, people started saying, who plays you in your biopic? Which some of these choices I'm about to say mine, but some people are like, actually, Emma Stone would play me in my biopic. And I'm like, would she? Is that realistic? Maybe it is. And my choices are not realistic. So my unanswerable question is, who would play you and or your parents, whatever you can think of, in your biopic? I'll start since I have my answers prepared. My parents. My mom would be, my mom listens to this podcast, so I took a lot of time to think about this. My mom would be Robin Weigert, who you may have seen play the therapist on Big Little Lies. She's been in a lot of stuff. She has the right vibe of like competence and warmth, but also like can get shit done, you know?
Yeah.
So I felt like that was the right vibe. And then I decided this is a little tough for my dad because he's a lot older than my dad and he looks a lot older than my dad. But I went with Tracy Letts, who just kind of has, he's the dad in Lady Bird. He's done a lot of other stuff. He just has the right like goofy vibes, you know? Mm. I felt like looks were and age were less important than just like the right energy. Sure. And then for me, I chose Lizzie Kaplan, which is just wildly unrealistic and also age wise, just not right.
Whatever.
But yeah, you know, self-indulgent, it's fine. Who would you guys pick for either of those categories?
I think my mom would be big nose icon Catherine Hahn because I need someone who's brunette.
You went with Catherine Hahn for your mom? Oh my God, I've got to meet your mom.
Yeah. Oh, well, my mom's blonde. So I'm just talking about like like what I look like in a movie. But I guess if
okay,
we're doing like,
okay,
I could bring a blonde actress for my mom. I don't know. This is hard on the spot.
I wasn't saying that based on hairstyle. I just, when I think about your mom, Catherine Hahn energy is just not, obviously, I just have not met her. So
my mom looks nothing like Catherine Hahn.
So why did you choose her?
No, I heard this question for the first time 10 seconds ago. Well, and I'm Googling big nose actresses, so I don't know. Amelia, do you have an answer on the top of your head?
Big nose actresses? I should have done that too. Sorry, go ahead.
It's stressful.
It is stressful.
With no prep.
I'm sorry, it was all on the outline for hours.
It's my fault. I know, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I don't know. But I will say that I did see Josh Gad do this, and he did Sally Field and Danny DeVito, which I thought was really funny. And usually I don't like Josh Gad, but I thought that was really funny.
That was pretty good.
Oh, my God.
Maybe Kate Blanchett for my mom. I don't know.
Ooh. I have to meet both your moms. Oh,
I want to pick Kate Blanchett for my mom. I met Amelia's mom. She's wonderful.
Actually, that fits. Yeah, she's great. Yeah. All right.
Well, great question, Kate.
Good prep, you guys. Thanks for reading the outline ahead of time.
All right. Okay. That's it for this week. That's a wrap.
I'm sweating.
I know, me too. I'm so hot. Okay. Thank you, Kaya, who has to now re-listen to this entire thing and edit it.
God bless you.
God bless you. And thank you all for listening. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Alwell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer.